Brandon, you and Jason Reynolds got together to write All American Boys, a book that is painfully relevant right now, and you'll be talking about it at the Community Read coming up here shortly. Tell us about the book and how the two of you came together to write it.
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate the invite and the chance to speak about All American Boys. And I really wish that Jason was with us as well. And I know he does as well. But the nature of the game is we can't always be everywhere together. But we were very much together in mind and spirit when we decided to co-write a novel together. This is a book that we published in 2015. So we're coming up on 6 years ago when we actually published the book. And I agree. It's, in fact, quite sad how relevant it still is today. Jason and I were responding to, at the time in 2014, what was really the kind of the beginnings of the Black Lives Matter movement. And Jason Reynolds, a black man, and Brendan Kiley, a white man, were responding to the moment in different ways. We both were angry, but a different kind of anger. I can't certainly speak for Jason and the black experience as a white man, but I know that from taking the time to listen as much as I could to the kind of pain that he was tapped into from a community perspective, the collective anguish that so many black families feel when they have to listen to yet another black family talk about the current pain that they're going through. And the pain I felt as a white person who felt both a little helpless and also frustrated and grappling with my own questions of accountability. Because though I am not someone who has ever delivered that kind of racial violence or endorsed that kind of racial violence, the very nature of my being white and my white privilege causes me some proximity to that violence that scares me, terrifies me, and I want to figure out ways to address.
During the Black Lives Matter movement and current conversations, I hear some saying, nah, we don't have systemic racism in the United States. These are just isolated incidents. I wonder how you would respond to that.
Well, thank you. And I, you know, I think this is why for us writing a novel about this experience was so important, because whenever we talk about systemic racism or institutional racism or structural racism, we have to remember that there are real people involved. And for us, we in particular wanted to talk about what it was like for teens who both experienced that kind of violence and witness that kind of violence. And when people are talking about structural or systemic racism not existing, I think it's unfortunately a form of denial in not wanting to grapple with the factual reality that exists out there. The Washington Post has done an excellent job cataloging the systemic racism and police profiling and abuse for the last few years. But there also are a whole host of other sources of information. You can follow a report that was supported by the Obama administration that really went in depth to talk about, in particular, the systemic racism in law enforcement. But we can't just lay the blame on law enforcement. Systemic racism is a part of life in America and every institution, whether it's education, whether it's healthcare. You can look at how COVID has affected communities of color much more significantly than white communities in America. You can look at food deserts and library deserts, all of which affect communities of color more than they affect white folks. It's unfortunate, but it is the reality of the United States that that systemic racism is real. And that's why co-writing a novel made so much sense. Because for us to sit down together as a black man and a white man trying to address this situation from that emotional core of existence, two teens who are grappling with this, we're talking about what it means to think about systemic racism as a problem that we can address together, not as something that is solely on the shoulders of the black community or communities of color and indigenous communities, but also for white communities to think about how they can be involved.
You must have made some self-discoveries, I would think both of you, during this writing process. And there must have been some fascinating conversations between the two of you, comparing experiences, I'm sure, maybe being stopped on the road, and how one was treated and how the other one was treated. What kind of self-discoveries did you make during the writing?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question, because I don't think either one of us got into it fully realizing the emotional journey that we each would go on. And again, for very different reasons. Jason and I, just to put this in context, did not approach this project cold without knowing each other. We were friends first. And I don't think we could have done this if we hadn't been friends first. Mm. We'd established trust and a meaningful relationship. And it required that in order for us to try to tackle this together. And I know that in the process of writing the book, there were times when, you know, Jason was kind of grappling with some questions about what it means to be a member of a family where a family member has become a hashtag, and the kind of real pain that he often talked about sort of grappling with as he thought about that in this experience. And when he and I were talking about growing up, and talking about our different experiences with law enforcement, one of the things that I realized was that when we're talking about racism, when we're talking about systemic racism, and we're talking about white privilege, so often when I was growing up, I was taught that racism denies people. It denies them, or it causes harm. What I don't think I ever really fully appreciated is that the flip side of the coin is also true, that because of racism, people are unfairly advantaged as well. And for me, those times that I was pulled over and I was speeding, and I didn't get a ticket, one of the things that I really had to think about was not just that I was lucky, not just that I was granted compassion and pity first in ways that story after story after story that Jason shared with me, he was not granted, but that in fact, that white privilege is an advantage. I am part of a group that is much, much more likely than a young Black person or a young Indigenous person to not only survive my interactions with law enforcement, but also really to not be held to account for my own crimes. The ACLU and the NYCLU have done significant studies on stop and frisk policies in New York City. And it's pretty staggering to see the figures for how often Black and Latinx people were stopped and searched for guns and drugs and contraband, and nothing was found, and how few times white folks were. But in fact, white folks were more likely to be found with drugs and guns and contraband. That is the kind of stuff that I was grappling with, thinking about what it really means to have white privilege, the advantage after advantage after advantage. It's hard for people who are white and don't feel privileged to hear that term, which I get completely. There's a significant amount of my own experience growing up and certainly in my larger family's experience where no one would ever think of themselves as economically advantaged or privileged in any way. But we have to think about these other experiences in life and think about those advantages. As the poet Claudia Rankine says, maybe instead of calling the term white privilege, we should call it white living.
And to kind of explore that a little farther, as you said, I think most whites probably don't see themselves, maybe not most, but many, as racist. And yet I always think that we're all inevitably in our environment. We develop some kind of a bias. How do we start looking at ourselves? How do we start that process of introspection? Because I would think that's one of the basic changes that would lead to doing something about systemic racism. It's looking in the mirror. How do you recommend that we start that process?
I am so grateful for that question, because I think it is a question that many people are afraid to ask themselves. And so I can't thank you enough for asking that question, because I think it's fundamental. You know, when I was growing up, the way that I was kind of taught about racism was that was a problem that happened over there. or that was a problem that happened in history in the past, and didn't really wasn't asked enough to think about how my own life was a participation in the larger story of racism in America. So I think your question gets right to the heart of that. And so for me, I'm kind of smiling to myself. I wish we were on video here, because I'm actually publishing a nonfiction book that tries to answer that question this year. and it's about reckoning with, as a white person, reckoning with the racism in your life. What that means, I think, is being a bit more honest about the history of the United States, being a bit more honest about how white privilege was literally baked into law in our country's history. That's an important first step. But the second step is, so what does that mean for today? Well, if you look at the percentages of CEOs, the percentages of the people who run TV companies and produce television shows, the people who produce the music business, the news industry, overwhelmingly is majority white. Narratives that satisfy those of us who are white are a major part of sort of how we tell our story in the United States right now, even though we are not the majority soon to be of the even population in the United States. So I think part of our reckoning has to be learning our history. It has to be doing a better job consuming more media that are not told by white voices. Because when you sit and read All American Boys as a white person, and you read the story of Rashad's family, and you have to sit in that hospital room with that family and listen to them debate how Rashad could have tried to protect himself more, or whether or not he even needed to do that, incorporating those stories into our family lives as white people, I think will help us learn to grapple with racism more boldly and more publicly than we have in the past, and not just waiting for someone else to try to fix it.
I want to tap into your teaching history here a little bit. You've worked with children for many years, and now as an author, you're touring and talking to kids about the book. Is there an age that is too young to talk to them about racism? I recently had a friend with a child say, you know, her very best friend is black, she's white, and she was never aware of racial differences until teacher at school started talking about it, and now she feels awkward. Is it too young? She was, by the way, I think between 6 and 7 years old at the time. What is the best way to approach our children and teach them about racism? And is there a better time to do it?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. You know, I'm thinking about a friend of mine who, in the summer of 2020, a black man who has two black sons, had to sit down with his 8-year-old son to give his son the talk, a talk about survival, about having to be aware of how race plays a role in his life. And I think about how so often so many white children are not given the same kind of explicit discussion about how race affects their lives. Often white families are afraid. We don't want it to be awkward. We maybe even feel a little guilty, or maybe we don't even have the right script. We don't know what to say. And yet, I also remember the first few minutes that my son was born. And I remember having to quickly kind of rush him over to the machine that I keep calling an incubator, but I know that's not the right term. But he needed to get, you know, he was turning blue. He needed to be revived quickly. Mm. And my son turned and grabbed my two pinkies. And from the first breaths of his life, he's turning to me for help and for instruction and for guidance. And as a parent, I think it's really my responsibility, my moral and ethical responsibility, to be teaching my child about race, because he's growing up in the United States of America, where race is a reality. There's no age, in my opinion, that's too young. You just need the right language, right? If I'm having a conversation with my toddler about something, I have to frame it in a way that's right for toddlers. With my teenage son or daughter, I have to frame it in a way that's right for that age. But there's no age that's too young. It's about how we communicate.
And then this event coming up with you and Jason talking to the community, but with a special focus on teens in our community here about the book, about racism, about all the things that we're touching on here. But what can you tell them about this event? What can they expect?
I think, first of all, one thing that people have to understand is that Jason and I, as much as we are doing our best to try to talk about race and racism and somewhat heavy subjects, we're both down-to-earth individuals who like to laugh and joke with everybody, and we care deeply about young people and wanting them to feel inspired and empowered. And I mean all young people of all races. And so I think one of the things people can expect from us is that we're going to try to have as honest a conversation as possible about all of this, but in a way that doesn't demonize anyone, but instead helps young people and families and adults who care about young people to facilitate productive conversations and meaningful conversations about race and racism and white privilege in life today. That's what they can expect. And I hope that we'll have a great turnout because I'm eager to hear the community's questions. And I know Jason is too. So it'll be great to sort of hear what everyone has to say.
And I hope the parents will join their teens in on this because I think these should be family conversations by all means as well.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Brendan, for taking a moment of your busy time to talk with us about All American Boys and the coming up virtual event. Looking forward to it.
Likewise, same here. And again, thanks so much for the invite. Can't wait to be speaking with everybody in the community there.